club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the streets certainly won't.
Hello, people, and welcome back to another episode of the FT LOL podcast, and welcome back to another feature session. We've had a former Tottenham, former Chelsea, and a former West Ham player on, but never a former Arsenal player. But I'm glad to say that changes today with this week's guest, Mr. Brian McDermott. How you doing, sir?
Good, Jack. How's yourself?
Yeah, very good. Very well. Well, other than at the time of recording, obviously the country is in mourning a little bit, but generally, you know, as an Arsenal fan, top of the league, can't complain
on that.
And yeah, it's going well. How about yourself?
I'm very well, yeah. Yeah, I'm busy doing lots of different bits and bobs in football. And I'm good. I'm doing lots of stuff like this, which is great. And it's nice to see you got your Arsenal top on tonight. I like that.
Yeah, had to represent that today. So what we're going to be talking about today is the greatest 11 of players that you've played with and managed and things like that. But I suppose before we get into that, let's take it right back to when you were a kid. So when did you get into football? Was it quite early on? Or?
Yeah, I was about 6, actually.
Okay.
I knew I wanted to be a pro footballer from about the age of 6 years of age. And obviously, I was told I was going to be too small and all the other stuff that comes with being a pro footballer.
Yeah.
A few rejections, got rejected by, not let go by QPR. I went to Millwall on trial for one game and they didn't take me. And then I was playing for Slough Schoolboys in the under-15s and I got scouted by Arsenal and just about scraped an apprenticeship. And I signed a pro deal at 17 and made my debut in 1979 at the age of 17. So then I had a career of about, 20 years or so, I suppose, in football. So I was lucky, fortunate to play that long.
Yeah, and you was a midfielder, weren't you? Did you always play there or?
Wide player, really. So, yeah, I played wide for, I played 70-odd games for Arsenal, played in Europe. Great football club, really was. Taught me so much. Taught me the values at Arsenal and the class of Arsenal was, second to none. And, had a good time there, to be fair. It wasn't easy at first. It was a difficult dressing room. Mm. Some tough lads there, but I played with some great players and... some I still speak to today.
Yeah. I mean, that's some first team to really get into. And I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that a bit later on and some of the players that were in that dressing room, I'm sure. But in terms of Arsenal, did you support them as a kid or who was your team?
To be honest, when I was a kid, say it quietly, I was a big Jimmy Greaves fan, obviously, at Tottenham. And then when you go to Arsenal, obviously things change. And I was a big Jimmy Greaves fan because he was a striker and I was a striker and a wide player. So at that age, he used to wear the number 8 for Spurs and he scored a shed load of goals and he was an incredible player. But obviously getting to Arsenal at 16 years of age and spending that long on there and having worked at Arsenal as well in the scouting world, I've got a massive affiliation with a football club at Arsenal.
And you did a few years there, didn't you? And so your first season, you say 79, so that would have been just after the Man United Cup final, I suppose. You would have been in the youth team for that.
Yeah, I was. So I think that was the year I made my debut against Bristol City in 79. I think we were 3-0 up and the manager, Terry Neill, put me on the pitch with about 20 minutes to go.
Okay.
And we were 3-0 up and Liam Brady smashed a long ball all the way out wide to me. And as it was travelling, I thought, oh, got to control this. And I managed to control it with my chest and controlled it out of play. So that was my first touch with the Arsenal. But the fans were good. They never booed me just because I controlled it out of play. We were 3-0 up at the time. So, yeah, Liam was in the team at that time. And we did have a top side, really. Top individual players. Just the league form was never as good as the cup form. We got to 3 cup finals on the spin. So
yeah,
I'm on one of them. Remember this?
Ipswich won it. One of them, I think.
Ipswich, West Ham, and Man United. Yeah, got beat by 2 and beat Man United.
He won the most difficult one.
Well, it's funny that game. Yeah. I remember that game. I was in the stands. It was only one sub at the time. I think it was 18, maybe 18, 19. And we were comfortable. We were 2-0 up. It wasn't a great game, by the way. Mm. Everyone thinks it was a great game. It wasn't. It was 2-0, pretty comfortable. And they got back to 2-2. Like, just as we thought we'd won the game 2-1, they got back to 2-2. And then I think Liam got the ball, passed it out to Graham Ricks on the left-hand side. Put a great ball in with last kick of the game, and Alan Sunderland scored that goal. And I'll never forget that. It was an incredible last 10 minutes of any game. I do remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, they call it the 5-minute final, didn't they?
Yeah.
So when you sort of first got started then, was there any players that really sort of put their arm around you and was the keys in sort of settling you in?
No. Not at the time. I was brought up with Chris White, Paul Davis. Paul Davis was a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And then we had a lot of older players in the dressing room. So Paul Davis and I were really, really close. Danny O'Shea, if you remember Danny O'Shea, Colin Hill, we played some games for Arsenal. We were all close, really. And then we had really experienced players in the dressing room. Liam was there. Graham Ricks, Alan Sunderland, Frank Stapleton, Pat Jennings, Pat Rice, Sammy Nelson, you know, all Arsenal legends, really.
Yeah.
And they're all older, experienced players. So it wasn't an easy team to get into as a young kid trying to make your way through the youth team, really.
Yeah, and I suppose in those days as well, compared to now, you've already mentioned the one sub thing. So, I mean, it must be a lot harder. And also cups. I don't know how you feel about cups, but you know, back in the day, every game was a first team. And I mean, as a manager, did you sort of try and put your first team out in every sort of FA Cup game, or did you have to, you feel you had to manage it at points?
Well, we were at Reading and at Leeds. Well, I was manager at Reading and Leeds. Yeah, we were, the FA Cup was important, really, at Reading. I mean, in my first couple of years, I think we got to 2 quarterfinals.
Yeah, was that the Liverpool when you beat them?
I was caretaker manager of the year. We beat Liverpool 2-1 at Anfield. And we deserved to win that night. You know, went into extra time and we did. So I put a lot of stake on the FA Cup. I actually think if I didn't get that job, if I didn't win that game at Anfield, I don't think I got the job, and I don't think we'd be speaking to each other tonight. So that was a really important result for me. I was told after that game that I was going to get the job permanently.
Okay.
I was caretaker at the time. So, yeah, I've got a lot to thank Liverpool for in as much as that got me that job. And Shane Long scored the winning goal, so that was really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that Reading team was full of kind of cult players that people kind of remember fondly throughout the years. I think you probably weren't there the whole time, but they had some depth at striker in particular, where Shane Long was what, third or fourth choice at one point, and it's, you see the career he's had now.
I was there all the time. So
right, before manager you was...
I was scouting. I was there for 13 years.
Oh, okay.
So from 2000 to 2013, I did every job at Reading. I was under 17 manager and head scout. I was head scout, under 19 manager, head scout, reserve team manager, and then I was manager. So I did 13 years at Reading, and I worked under Alan Pardew, Brendan Rodgers, Steve Coppell, and then I got the manager's job. Loved working under all the managers. Alan brought me in the first place. which I was always grateful for. And Steve Copper was brilliant. I love working with Steve. We had a great time. We scouted some fabulous players, had a good time. And the year 2005-06, we got promotion with a record points, 106 yeah. points. So, yeah, all of those guys, Leroy Leiter, Dave Kitson, Shane Long, Kevin Doyle, that, you know, they were the four strikers in the 2005-06 season. So we had an abundance of strikers and also top players, Sidwell Harper. You know, that team, I can name that team backwards. Just a fantastic bunch of players and great, great team and great manager.
Yeah, yeah, that was definitely one of the best ever championship sides. It was
the best. So people talk about that and they say, who's the best? There's no doubt. I mean, if you look at the stats, 106 points, it was the most balanced team. And people have got 100 points, I think, or whatever, but no one's got close to it yet. Mm. I don't think that'll be beaten, Jack, to be honest. I really don't.
Yeah, I think the way that league is so competitive, it's so hard to get out of. Was it 106 points? Yeah, that's insane. Achievement, really.
We lost two games. First game of the season, lost it. Didn't lose again until March. That was in March against Luton. Mm. Then never lost again. So that was in that league to only lose two games, where people lose 8 and 9 games and still get promoted.
Yeah,
it is insane. It's incredible, and it says a lot for that players and the staff at that time, really.
Yeah, John Madejski is quite a big character, isn't he? How's he to work
Brilliant.
Under?
Brilliant. Best chairman I worked with. He let us get on with our work. He was supportive when he needed to be. If we won, he'd say well done. If we lost, he'd say bad luck. He didn't over dramatise too many situations. All he ever wanted really was after the game, just go and have a drink with him after the game and have a chat about the game. That's it. Never asked too much. We stayed within budget. We always run the club in the black. We never had massive amounts of money, but we knew what we were doing. We had great people there as well. You know, Nick Hammond, director of football, Nigel Gibbs, my assistant there, and Kevin Dillon, Wally Down, Steve Copwell and Pardew, all great people. And you know, if you look at what's happening there again now, I look at it and I think, oh, Paul Ince is there and doing a great job. Mark Bowen, director of football, Brian Carey, head of recruitment. They've got people back together again. Noel Hunt's there, Mikael Ledgerwood. They got people that I can relate to again. So I'm following them. Shane Long's gone back there. And all the recruitment that they've done now, just decent lads.
Yeah.
They've gone back to what the Reading way was all about, recruiting really decent people.
Yeah, so a lot of former players and players that you've worked with. We're seeing a bit more of that sort of in general now, aren't we? With sort of sporting directors and, I mean, even at Arsenal, you've got Arteta, Edu and stuff like that. Was it the same sort of back in the 80s, did that happen?
No, not really. Didn't have as many people. You know, there was the staff was very limited. I mean, they used to have a first team manager, an assistant manager, a physio, a kit man, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got about two coach loads of staff to go to games and away games, and you've got sports scientists, you've got physios, you've got nutritionists, you've got the lot. Completely different world to what we lived in back in the time, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, really. Totally different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if we get into your team then, so how do you want to do it? Because you've played with some great players, you've managed some great players. Do you want to kind of mix it up and do a bit of both? Yeah.
Let's see what it looks like.
Okay. All right. So starting goalkeeper. I can imagine who this might be.
Who do you think? Got one guess.
Mr. Pat Jennings.
Yeah, Pat. So Pat was obviously a legend. Tottenham, Arsenal, Northern Ireland. Very, very, just completely unflappable. What he was brilliant at, he was brilliant with his feet. He was one of the first goalkeepers who could put the ball wherever with his feet. He could play in this day. And
he scored, didn't he, from a... Yeah, he did. Goal kick runs,
he might have scored two, but I might be wrong. But he was incredible with his feet. He could use the ball. That was in the days when there was back passes, so he could pick it up. He actually didn't need to pick it up. He could use his feet comfortably. And one thing about Pat is he always made saves look easy. So he made the job look easy when it wasn't easy because his positioning was so good. It was just top draw, really. Yeah. Unflappable goalkeeper. Never really lost his cool. I saw him lose his cool once in the dressing room where there was an argument between him and Don Howe at half-time in a game. But apart from that, never seen him lose his cool.
Yeah. And I've never known someone to be a legend at Arsenal and Tottenham. Like, he just...
That's unheard of. But he is. He can go back to Arsenal, legend. Goes back to Tottenham, legend. And I think it's his personality, really, more than anything. He's just a good guy. I think he does a bit of goalkeeping stuff at Spurs now, if he still does it or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I saw that. I don't know if it's now, but definitely in the last few years. One thing I always hear about Pat Jennings as well is the size of his hands.
Yeah, big hands.
Yeah.
Big hands and also big hair. Still got big hair. Still, like, amazing how much hair he's got, which I can't say that I cannot relate to that, but that's fine. He still looks $1 million, Pat. I saw him at a Tottenham game about a year ago or 2 years ago, so he looked great, and he's a great guy as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, moving into the defence, well, what formation are you going to go with?
You got one guess?
I'm going to guess a formation that Todd Boehly tried to implement, the 4-4-3.
4-4-3.
Exactly, yeah. Have you heard that story?
No, I haven't, but that is 12 players. You probably win.
No, he suggested that to Thomas Tuchel, that they play a 4-4-3.
Not a bad idea, if you can get away with it.
No, but they obviously had a disagreement over that and the beginning of the end. But I'll go with 4-4-2.
Yeah, you've got it. I'm going to do that because you can. And we played that system when we got promotion. Steve played that system.
Was that also kind of the main formation when you played as well, the 4-4-2?
Ish. Sometimes it was 4-3-3, actually. But generally 4-4-2. I would say 4-4-2. Yeah. Right back. So I'll throw a little curveball in. Scott Hiley.
Yeah.
I played with Scott Hiley at Exeter. And he went on for Birmingham, I think, as it was after Exeter. He was a right winger who was converted by Terry Cooper. Scott, he played as a right winger. And then I came in as a right winger. And he was popped back into the right back.
Okay. He was
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. First season as fullback, me and him played together. Best partnership I've ever had. Absolutely top lad, could run all day, learn how to defend on the job. And between us, we weren't the best defenders, but we were good going forward. And we won the league at Exeter by 10 points with Terry Cooper, who was a brilliant manager. So Scott Eiley was right back, and I loved playing with him. Good on the ball, good runner, decent enough defender, could cross the ball, knew when to give me the ball and leave me alone, and knew when to go on the overlap. You know, and I've played with Pat Rice and people like that, legends at Arsenal, but he's a modern-day fullback. And he was playing in whatever it was, 1990-odd or 1980-odd or whatever it was when we played. So, yeah, a lot of time for Scotty.
It's not a name I've heard of, but, yeah, if he's the best sort of partnership that you've had, do you think that's because he was effectively your position before, so he knew kind of what runs you were going to make and things like that?
Probably, yeah, he knew the position I was, but he learned on the job the right back position. But he was a modern day fullback.
Yeah,
he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I had a lot of time for Scotty, spoke to him about 3 or 4 years ago, and yeah, he was great to play with. He really was.
Okay, all right, so do you want to go over to the other side at left back?
Kenny Sansom.
Yeah.
Kenny, we did a lot of 1v1 training in like man-to-man against each other. I was always put up against Kenny. Kenny was one of these, he didn't tackle, but he took the ball off you. He wasn't like a Stuart Pearce or a Julian Dix or a Mark Dennis who smashed you. And don't get me wrong, they were all top players, but they could tackle Kenny could tackle, but he would be more an interceptor, and he was really clever, bright as a button, used to get on the ball and nick in front of defenders, and he could get forward. He's a modern day fullback as well. He could play now, he could pass it, he could get into good areas, he was clever. He could go and play in midfield. Like, you know, if you watch the Man City fullbacks, they're going into the middle of the pitch playing. Kenny could do that. So Kenny would be my left back. No danger.
Okay. Yeah, he doesn't really get spoken about that much these days. And I mean, the amount of caps he got as well, there's not many.
He got 96 caps. More.
Yeah, I think only Ashley Cole maybe as a fullback's got more for England. But yeah, you don't really hear his name. But yeah, as an Arsenal fan growing up, it's a name that, yeah, you become very familiar with and what a top player he was.
He was 100%. And then Dave O'Leary, centre-half. Another one absolutely could play in second gear. Played loads and loads of games for Arsenal. Obviously,
yeah.
Went on to be a top manager. Unflappable, quick, could handle the ball. He could play today, no problem. You know, he can take the ball out of defence comfortably. Yeah, a lot of time for him. Really, really good player, Dave. And, you know, for his club and his country. And, you know, he had the lot, really, as far as having it. You know, another one. You could transport him into 2022 and stick him straight into a Manchester City or an Arsenal team now, or Man United team, whatever you like. He could play comfortably. He wasn't just head it and kick it. He was someone who could handle the ball, and he's clever.
Yeah, and you mentioned his managerial career as well. Was he one where you could tell he was going to be a manager? Do you get that feel with players that they're going to be future managers?
Not really. I didn't really see that. I mean, he was just getting on with his job, and I was just trying to find a way of getting in more games at the Arsenal. So I never really looked at him and thought, oh, he's going to be a manager. But I met him when he was, because I was managing Leeds and he lived near me in Harrogate. When I managed Leeds, I met him when I was up there. So we talked about the Leeds connection, and
yeah,
you know, he knows how big Leeds is and I know how big Leeds is. It's only until you get there and you manage and you live around the city that you realise that what a massive football club is, that Leeds United is. Leeds is absolutely ginormous. You know, you go everywhere and everyone knows Leeds United. It's incredible. You go to Dublin, everyone knows. You know, you go anywhere, Leeds is well known and well thought of. So, yeah, I had a really interesting time at Leeds. And what I did find is, you know, I lived in the south all my life. I found the people up there to be fab, really lovely people. And it was a difficult time for me personally and professionally with what was going on at the club at the time, but they were great. They were really good. And I think as long as you're honest up there and you tell the truth and you do the best you can, they're all right with that. They can live with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of the kind of northern sort of clubs compared to the south as well, certainly in London, there's so much competition. You've got Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham, West Ham, massive clubs. Leeds, I mean, obviously historically massive, but they're a one club city as well, aren't they? A bit like Newcastle. So,
yeah, listen, if you're in Leeds, you've got to support Leeds.
Yeah.
You know, if you're walking in Leeds High Street, you've got Leeds fans there. You don't see too many Man United fans there. You definitely don't see too many Man United fans in Leeds. That's a big rivalry. So, no, they're a. You don't really, honestly, you have to go there and you have to spend a bit of time there to realise what it's all about. And I knew all about Leeds from the 70s. And actually, some of the players would turn up for the games. Eddie Gray was a friend of mine. He's lovely. Norman Hunter, Peter Lorimer sadly passed. Lovely people. I had a lot of time for all the older players there. And I kind of tried to embrace what they had there in the past. Some managers don't, but I didn't. I wanted to embrace that because I remember that team.
Mm.
I remember them all walking out together and Don Revy, and what a fantastic football club that was.
Yeah, because that was the early 70s, wasn't it, when they were at their peak. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And the other one, left-footed centre-half, Sean Taylor, who used to play for Exeter with me. Left-footed, probably the opposite of Dave. He would go and win every header, put his head in where he shouldn't put his foot in. so brave, incredibly brave, led by example, was captain of Exeter when we won the league, but he didn't, he wasn't a talker. He was more of a, he just led by example. And I've never seen such a brave centre-half in all my life. He would definitely put his head in where you shouldn't be putting your feet. And he was that type of character. A lot of time for Sean. He went on to have a good career in different clubs and did a bit of managing and stuff. But yeah, I really liked Sean. And yeah, good. He was head it, kick it, hit people. No one went past him. Great combination with Dave O'Leary. Could have played in the Premier League back in that day. Could have played for in the first division, no problem.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what you want with your centre backs, don't you? You want them to complement each other's skills. So, yeah, sounds like you've done that. That Exeter side, then what division were you in when you sort of ran away with the league?
Fourth division. Terry Cooper was my manager. I was at the end of my career. We just won the year before I was at Cardiff, and we got promotion and won the Welsh Cup. And I played all the games, and
yeah.
I left there and then went to Exeter and played all the games for Exeter as well. And I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, you're playing week in and week out. I did the same at Oxford and we won the league. So I got three promotions as a player. I was, you know, and just playing, you can't beat playing all the time. You know, I don't care what level you're playing at. You just, a lot of players nowadays are sat in the 23s and not playing. You know, and they finish their career with hardly any games. So I stayed probably too long at Arsenal. I should have left a bit earlier because I didn't get enough games. Mm-hmm. 70 games in 7-8 years isn't enough. It's nowhere near it. But having said that, I was playing for a top club and a wonderful club at Arsenal.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it, with the balance. And I think with like the way that people look at like the League Cup and Europa League especially and stuff like that, you do get a bit more chances to play if you're a young player at a sort of big club. But back then,
there's more subs. And you know that in our day there wasn't. There was one.
There's five now, isn't there?
Five that can get on. But in our day there was one. So
yeah,
it was only 12. And actually, in the late 70s and early 80s, it was difficult to get yourself out of the team once you're in it. You know, they picked the same 11 most weeks. That was the thing. Unless there was an injury. I mean, Aston Villa's team in 1981 won the league. They used 13 players to win that league. It was incredible.
Blimey.
Back in, I think it was 81, whatever that was.
Yeah.
But there you go. Right winger.
Can you put yourself in?
No, I'll put Alan Curtis in. Alan Curtis, Welsh international, played with me at Cardiff. Obviously played in the top level, played for his country. He was with me at Cardiff when he was getting older, but absolute genius. Could handle the ball like you can't believe. Scored goals, made goals. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant player. Lovely guy, funny as you like, great character. And he obviously played top level. And he was coming to the end of his career when I ended up playing with him, but he was still a genius. Brilliant on the ball, great set play taker. He would get into my all-time 11 of team that I played with all day long.
Was he at Leeds?
Alan might have been at Leeds. He was at Swansea.
He did the Swansea Cardiff double.
Yeah, no, he's another one. So he did Swansea, a bit like Pat, really. Legend at Cardiff, legend at Swansea. Because of his personality, you know, that's not usual. You know, Swansea, yeah. Cardiff, you can't play for both of them. It's a difficult one. But he did it like Pat. Pat was the same at Arsenal Tottenham. He's been brilliant, absolutely brilliant player. Really was. And I love playing with him. I played on the other side. I played on the left. He played on the right. So, yeah, good player. Really good player.
How big a rivalry is that there?
Massive.
Cardiff Swansea one. Yeah.
Massive. I played in London Derby games. I played in a few derbies. Swansea Cardiff right up there. Really is. It's a big, it's quite a volatile atmosphere. I played in three or four of them games. And, it's very, very difficult. Full house. Quite really volatile atmosphere.
Yeah, and do they, I mean, I suppose Wales, the stereotype's rugby, but down, I suppose, south of Wales, do they like their football as much?
Brilliant. Yeah, I loved Cardiff. I lived in a place called Penarth when I was in Cardiff. It was great. Really lovely place. People were friendly. Yeah, I had a lovely time there. My first daughter was born there. Yeah, I've got nothing but good to say about Cardiff and the time that I spent there. And we won the World Cup and won the league. So, well, we got promotion, become second in the league. But it was great. I had a lovely time there.
Yeah, that Welsh Cup, I've not heard of that before. Because Cardiff have always been in the English league. So how did that work then?
Well, they played in the Welsh Cup as well as played in the FA Cup.
Okay.
So, you know, the Welsh Cup, I think, is the oldest cup in the world. So we played, I think it was Wrexham in the final. We won 2-0. So, yeah, that was nice. We got a nice double that year. And then, yeah, so no, I had a lot of time for Cardiff, to be fair.
Yeah.
What we got? Left side?
Left side, yeah.
Graham Ricks.
Okay.
Rixey was a top player, best trainer, most days. He was one of those players, when I first got to train with the first team, he took my breath away. He probably doesn't get the recognition that he deserves because Liam was in the team at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of comparisons between Liam Brady and himself. But he was brilliant, unbelievable trainer. Genius with the football, could put the ball wherever you like, played a lot of games for the club. Really, really good player. There's another one, he's sort of an unsung person, an unsung hero at Arsenal. Yeah, but he was good. He was a good player. And he had his career away from as a manager, et cetera, when he went to other clubs, Chelsea, et cetera, and Portsmouth. But genius, absolute genius with the ball.
Yeah, I remember he played a lot of games. I think he's probably... He's got to be one of the most. I don't think he won the league. I think the timing was a bit off for him, and I think he joined just after 71 and then left just before Anfield 89. But yeah, he played a hell of a lot of games for us.
He was involved in the cup teams, and yeah. It was kind of a cup team at that time. Mm. To be honest, it was more of cup football than we didn't have enough in the locker consistency wise to win the league at the time. But he was a brilliant player, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Centre mid, Liam Brady.
Is he the best player you've played with?
I think so. He was up there. I only played for a short period of time with him. Modern day centre midfield player, absolutely top draw. Could run with it, could shoot, could pass it. Went shortly after. I think it was 1980, he went to Juventus.
Yeah.
We played them in a friendly. We drew 2-2 in Juventus and he was playing. I think he might have scored that night. He could do anything with the ball. He could run with it. Over short bursts, he was very, very quick. He was a terrific player. And obviously it made my debut. And he was in the same team when we made my debut. So, yeah. And I see Liam now and again. Saw him at Steve Rowley's funeral recently, so yeah.
Yeah, because he had the sort of top job for quite a while, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He was at Arsenal doing the academy for quite a number of years. And I don't really know what he's doing now, Liam, but he was a great player. I could have put Tony Adams in my team, so I played in the reserves for Tony, but that doesn't really count. So, but Tony's a mate. I play golf with Tony now and again, so... obviously, if I'd have played in the first team with him, he would definitely be in my team as well.
Who's better at golf, you or Tony?
Him. So we played twice and had 2-4 balls, and he won the first time. And after about 12 holes, my partner and I were 3 up, and I thought, oh, this is it, we're going to win, and we managed to blow it. So he was well pleased with that.
Mm.
So, yeah, so Liam was one midfield player. The other one would be Paul Davis, good mate of mine.
Yeah.
Top player, probably doesn't get the credit he deserves either.
No, should have got more cash, shouldn't he, as well? I think he only got like 2 or 3, something like that.
Great player, absolutely great player. Could tackle, could pass it. And we were brought up together. We'd kind of roomed together. I still see Dave regularly now when I do the pro licence courses and stuff like that. He's a lovely man, and I had a lot of time for him. I've got a lot of time for him.
Or do you sort of take sort of lessons on that then, the pro license stuff?
Well, I did my pro license in 2011, sorry. Well, I had all the other courses, my prelim, the A license, then you do the pro license and that's it. You can't do any more after that. Do little courses. So yeah, I've done all my pro license, but Dave-O works on it. He works on the pro license. So,
oh, okay. He's on that side of it. Yeah.
Yeah. He works on that side. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So into your front two now.
Yeah. Frank Stapleton.
Okay.
Yeah. Frank was leaving, really. He was on his way to Man United as, and I had to replace him, I think, in a few games when he left. But I did play with him. Top centre forward. He could do the lot. He could hold it up. He could bring people into the game. He could win headers. He could run behind. He could press the front line, the defenders. Another one who could play now. No problem. Number nine. Great first touch, could score goals, brave as you like, really brave with his back to play, which he needed to be in those days when centre-halves used to smash her. It was allowed for about two or three goes. You always got two or three smashes at the forwards and the wingers. He was a fabulous player, not just for Arsenal, but Man United, but for Ireland as well. So, yeah, quiet guy off the pitch. Just kept himself to himself, but brilliant centre forward, led the line fantastically well. A lot of time for Frank as a player. I haven't seen Frank a lot actually since don't know what he's up to now, but I think he's seen him a couple of times. He still looks really well, but no, he was a top player.
How did you mentioned the Man United transfer as well. How did the fans perceive that? Would it have been the same as these days when, I don't know, like Van Persie, for example, moved on?
No, it was never like, listen, you've got social media now. Things are different now. I mean, so different now compared to then. You know, it was a back page of the paper and that was the end of it. Players would go to Man United. I mean, Van Persie goes there and it was a massive uproar back in the days. We all remember. But Frank, it was quite a quiet transfer, but great transfer for them. You know, we should have kept him. There's absolutely no danger we should have kept him. But the money that was being paid then, not in the same world that we live in now.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not in the same world at all. I mean, it was good money back in those days, but you know, it wasn't money that was life-changing. Now it's every salary that these guys get is life-changing money for most people. So Frank would have gone there for a lot more money, I suppose. It was quite a quiet transfer at the time, but not in the same. It's no social media. It was a different world that we lived in then, really. And strikers-wise, you know, I played with Tony Woodcock, Alan Sunderland, Charlie Nicholas, Clive Allen was there for one.
He didn't actually play, did he? Didn't he play one game, was it?
I don't think so. He played.
Because it cost £1 million and then he...
Cost £1 million. It was really strange. I was on holiday and I heard that we'd signed Clive Allen. And then I met Clive. I knew Clive anyway. And then I met him. He'd come to the training ground. He was there a couple of weeks. And then a couple of weeks later, Kenny Sansom turned up and Clive went to, was it Crystal Palace or QPR? Crystal Palace, I think.
He played for all of them. He did play for...
It was very strange.
Yeah, he played for every London team.
To this day, I don't know what happened. It looked like they wanted to do a deal to get Kenny Sansom and using Clive. So they bought Clive to get Kenny. That's what it looked like on the outside.
Yeah.
But I'll never know. I'll never know what happened there. But, yeah, he was there. So, yeah, out of all the strikers, Frank would be one. And probably Charlie Nicholas, I loved. Great lad. He was sort of, you know, we were both single at the time. Charlie came to London in 83. He could have gone anywhere. He could have gone any of the clubs in the country. Yeah. He wanted to come to Arsenal. And he made his debut in 1983 when we beat Luton 2-1. And it was like, he was a bit like the David Beckham of his time.
Yeah, Champagne Charlie, wasn't it?
The first game that we had, we beat Luton 2-1. And I got the winning goal that day. It was about 40-odd thousand. And he said to me after the game, he said, oh, Brian, what are you doing after the game? I went, I'm going out with my mates in Windsor, because I live near Windsor. He went, can I come? I went, when do you want to come? You must have luck. He said, I don't know anyone around here. So we drove back to Windsor and we had a night out in Windsor in a nightclub that I was a member of. And yeah, it was a really good night, actually. I think about 3 days later, we played Wolves and we beat them as well. So yeah, I love Charlie. He's a great guy. Really, really was a good guy. But if I was going to put a striker in to play that I'd play with, that would be in my team, it would be Tony Woodcock.
Okay.
Tony could do anything. He was brilliant in behind, good to feet, could score goals, was brave, worked really, really hard for the team and had an unbelievable career. So if you look at Frank Stapleton, Tony Woodcock, that would look like the perfect combination, really.
Great hair as well.
Great Barnet, absolutely. Loved his Barnet, always. Even now, I think his hair's still the same. I think it's got even bigger than it was then. Yeah, and he's 60-odd years of age, to be fair to him. Yeah, a lot of these ex-Arsenal players have managed to keep their hair. I certainly haven't.
I was sure you was going to put in... I don't know how much you played with him, to be fair, but John Aldridge.
Yeah, so John would have been another one.
That would have been before, I suppose that would have been before his John, kind of peak as well.
Yeah, well, Frank and Woody was like incredible, but John was here. John just got better. So I played with him at Oxford. He was sensational finisher, best ever. One of the best finishers I've ever seen. But he played for me in the Championship as it is now.
Mm.
But I think Woodcock and Stapleton as the two would be just sensational. But John Aldridge was obviously just had a great career. And even at Oxford, he would just score goals for fun. You know, we had at Oxford was amazing, really. You know, Billy Hamilton, John Aldridge, John Truick, Trevor Hebbard, Dave Langan, Bobby McDonald, really top players, Briggs, Shot, and these were tough, with a really tough manager and Jim Smith.
Mm.
And that was never an easy place to go and get a result if you're an opposition team going to the Manor Ground at Oxford. And that was in the days when Robert Maxwell was the chairman, so... Interesting times they were as well. But no, I'd go with Frank and I'd go with Tony as my strikers.
Yeah. That's a good partnership and a nice team that. You've got a lot of sort of nice partnerships in there. So you said as well, you sort of said maybe Liam Brady's the best player that you've played with. In terms of players you've played against,
yeah.
Who comes to mind for that as the best?
Dalglish. Kenny Dalglish. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
He was my... I've got two autographs in my life. One was Eddie Gray when I never told him this, actually. I might have told him.
Well, when you was Leeds manager or...
No.
Way before.
Way before. When I was playing, I got his autograph. I loved the way he played, Eddie.
Mm.
And then I was lucky enough to meet him. He used to interview me after games, and I think I might have told him that. I got two autographs. One was him, and the other one was my dad got Kenny Dalglish's autograph. And Kenny wrote on it, I should be getting your autograph, which was nice. But genius, you know, not just genius as far as his brain, his thought process, and the way games should be played. You know, he could drop into the hole and pop balls in behind for Rush to run in behind. He was brave. He scored goals. I mean, he's an absolute god in Liverpool. And, you know, for everything that he's done for that city and for that football club, you know, he's recognised as someone who's just an amazing guy. And, yeah, playing against him, he was very, very, very special.
Yeah, we've had a couple of his ex-teammates on and they've sort of said the same thing. So it's coming more and more to life how good of a player was, because you hear things, but I was obviously not. I mean, when I started watching football, he was a manager at that point, but one of the sort of great player managers as well when he got into that. And then you've obviously played for Arsenal, you played for Cardiff. Derby wise, what's the biggest one that you've played in or been a part of as a manager? Because Was you when you was at Leeds, did you play United at all or not?
No, I didn't. I played against Sheffield Wednesday and got hammered one. For some reason, it's we played in the Yorkshire Derby at 12 o'clock, live on Sky. And we just started
all that 12 o'clock.
Oh, yeah, and rightly so. Oh my God, I always had this one as a manager, and I must have managed what 400 or 500 games. I always had this one thought in my mind, God, imagine if we got beat 6-0 live on TV, public humiliation, and we got beat 6-0 live on TV, and they keep showing it on Sky. They show two of my games that I was involved in.
Reading Arsenal, do they show?
Oh, that's another one. I want to talk about that as well. They talk about Swansea when we got beat 4-2. They talk about 6-0 Sheffield Wednesday on the telly regular.
Yeah,
it's like I've never won a game as a manager. And then the other one, everyone says to me, "Was you involved in that game when Reading were 4-0 up and cruising against Arsenal?" I went, "Yeah, I stood on the line next to Arsene Wenger's manager, and we got beat 7-5. That was the weirdest game ever, honestly. I swear to you, the referee must have added on 15 minutes extra time at the end.
Yeah, I remember watching that, and I was just like, you just thought, yeah, it's over. And it was just, I just started laughing when we equalised. Like, it was like, oh my God. Like, you just, because I think there was two goals in injury time. And yeah, that was also the game that they threw their shirts in the crowd, didn't they? And then they had to get them back.
I'm glad you was laughing. I wasn't.
No.
I was devastated. I just thought to myself, no, this can't happen. But you know what's really interesting, Jack? I'll tell you what's really interesting. We were 4-0 up. We could have been 6-0 and we played really well. And just before half-time, long ball down the middle, flick on, they score. I don't know, it might be Theo Walcott scored. And I went in at half-time and I knew, and I had to up the ante in the dressing room because I knew what was coming. I thought, that is just not good. We go in at 4-0, we win. I'm convinced we win the game. 4-1 just put a different complexion on the game.
Yeah, yeah.
They scored after about an hour, and then we were pretty comfortable, and then they scored two goals right at the last knock-ins of the game. And it just wasn't meant to be. We got, and it, you know, they got to 5-4. They got to 5-4, and then we made it 5-5. We equalised again, and then they won the game 7-5 in the last... In extra time, and the two lads threw their shirts into the crowd because they thought it was up 4-4. They thought it was a replay, but it obviously wasn't. So yeah, there's three games that you've picked out. Nice ones. 6-0 defeat, 4-2 defeat at Wembley, 7-5 defeat.
Well, on the positive, what is the best, like your proudest achievement as a, well, as a manager and as a player, I suppose.
First season getting to the quarterfinal of the cup when I took the job in 2010, we were second bottom of the league and we got to eighth in the league, nearly got to the playoffs. That was pretty good. Got to the quarterfinal of the cup the following year and got to the playoff final. Really difficult time personally to lose that game, but looking back at it, you know, I think, oh, fair play, you did all right. And then the following year, we lost the first 5 out of 7 games. And then we went on to win the league, which was incredible, really. Great, great bunch of staff. And I look back at that now fondly. I look back at that with the people that were involved really, really fondly. Actually winning that league, got the manager of the season, and I was in the top 6 in the country with the Premier League managers as well.
Yeah.
So I look back at that now really fondly. At the time, I think because you're in it, you know, you're right in amongst it. You can't have any time for reflection. And it's only when you walk away from it a little bit that you kind of have a bit of time for reflection. So yeah, they were good times. And you know, when I went to Leeds in the first, I got there with 5 games to go and they'd lost 6 on the trot, and we won the first game and then we won the second game. And to be fair to the Leeds fans, they took me in really as one of their own people. And I've got a lot of affection for Leeds, as I have for Reading, as I have for Arsenal. A lot of affection.
Yeah. Do you see yourself getting back into management now, or
not really? I'm never really chased anything. Really, I do a lot of I do presentations now for different companies and football clubs and on courses. You know, I do a presentation called Winning, Losing, Mental Health and Finding Balance, which I do, which I love doing. I look after a couple of younger players that are trying to make their way. I do a bit of mentoring with the League Managers Association. So eventually I'll be just mentoring some managers. So yeah, I'm busy. I'm doing what I want to do. So I'm pretty happy, really. And I've done nearly 500 games, so it's quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose that mentoring stuff probably weren't about in the day, and you know, the whole kind of mental health piece as well. That's come more to prominence in the last sort of 10 years or so. It's good to see.
I hope so. And for me, it's important. It's really important. You know, when I look at some of the stuff that's going on with the academy stuff, and you know, I look at that TV program with Crystal Palace and the young players that are going to be released or they're going to be retained, and all the pressure that comes on these kids at 12 and 13 and 14. Mm. Wow, it's just too much, you know. And I've lived that life, so I understand what it looks like. My nephew's at Chelsea now. My brother's boy is at Chelsea. He's 12, you know. We just want him to go and enjoy his football. And
yeah.
He signed a new contract for Chelsea, and who knows? We'll see what happens. But, you know, as an uncle or a parent or whatever, just let them play and let them enjoy themselves. And that's my advice to any parent. Just let them play. And whatever any parent says on the line to their child, it isn't going to make any difference. It's let the coaches deal with the players. And nowadays, I think it's not like it used to be. I think, you know, there's quite a good awareness of mental health with the kids now, as far as the coaches are concerned in the academies.
Yeah, it's kind of just part of the normal everyday life now, isn't it? Whereas before, it was a bit of a unknown thing. Or if you spoke up, it was a bit like, oh.
It wasn't unknown because it was there, and people used to suffer from different mental health issues, but no one talks, because you're not allowed, are you? You know, if you're in 1981, you're not allowed to talk about you don't feel like yourself today, or you feel a bit like an imposter, or you don't feel good enough. You can't be saying things like that. And you know, I certainly did that up to the age of about 50 odd years of age. I never said it to anyone if I was ever struggling. I'd just keep things to myself.
And do you think the crowds have changed as well in your years, from when you was coming up till
they were fighting each other in my day.
Yeah.
I spent most of the time on the terrace fighting each other. So, you know, those were the days when, you know, there was standing in terraces, and there was a lot of trouble before games, and people would meet up for fights before the games in the 80s. So that was normal. And now it's different. You know, everyone sits down, everyone's got a good seat, everyone's got a good view, which is nice. Fans are different now, and it's a little bit more with social media. The expectation on managers is incredible. The expectations on players is incredible. You know, you have a good game, you're a god. If you have a bad game, you're useless. You know, there's always a bit in between, really. You're not useless and you're not a god. And I think it'd just be nice to just temper some of the stuff that you see on social media. It's not nice, some of the stuff you see. And, you know, these are people you're talking about. These are actually people.
Yeah.
I know a lot of footballers, I know a lot of coaches, I know a lot of managers that read this stuff. And my suggestion would be to try and stay away from it and avoid it, because mentally you don't, it's not a good place to be reading stuff about you that's not nice, that's unpleasant, and just stay away from it. Alex Ferguson said it years and years and years ago. Someone said to him about reading the papers.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And he said, best thing to do, don't read them. And that's kind of, that would be a lot of, if I'm a football player coming through now, and stop, don't read the good, don't read the bad, just try and stay away from it. But it's difficult. Social media's everywhere now. That's kind of, this is the life we live on. You go on the train, everyone's on the phone. You go in a restaurant, everyone's on the phone. People can have a date now and not even meet each other. You can have a date, start the date, have a bit of a date in the middle, finish your relationship and not having met each other. That's kind of how it is these days. It seems to be that way. And it's just, it's all a bit weird, really.
I know social media was about when you was at Reading, but I can imagine now, if you said you'd lost five of the first seven that season, I can imagine kind of what they'd be saying. But I mean,
I think they were saying it then as well. They probably were. you can't get involved in that. You know, you have to just try and focus on the next game and the process. And, you know, we were coming off the back of losing in the playoff final. So I had some brownie points, really. But having said that, in this day and age, if you lose five out of the first seven, you lose your job.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
nine times out of ten.
Yeah. Owners now are brutal, isn't they? To be fair, Reading does seem that you've reeled off the managers at the start, you know, like Pardew. And I mean, I know Rogers got sacked as well just before you came, but I mean, they've managed to pick out some good ones and tend to kind of stick by them and stuff. Whereas,
well, they did. So from 2000 to 2013, Reading had four managers. That tells you.
Yeah.
Consistency there and one chairman. And then I got involved, a new chairman came in, he sacked me, the Russian guy came in, Anton Zingarevich. And then after that, you had a period of other different owners. You had six managers in the space over like 5 years.
Mm.
So that tells you what you need to know, really.
Yeah.
And we had three or four in the space of 13 years. That's the difference. And I'm absolutely convinced about it. You know, you've got to have a bit of consistency. I mean, look at Manchester City. All right, they've got the best players in the world, but their scouting is unbelievable. They've made them about 58 million quid in the black this year, and they've got the best centre forward in the world.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Other
teams have got the 200 million in debt because the scouts that they've got there, I know them. They're good people. They get paid well. The scouting is really, really important to that football club. Liverpool scouts are very good as well. Good people. Get paid decent enough money because it's really important. People say to me the recruitment's really, really important in football, but then they pay scouts peanuts. It's wrong, absolutely wrong.
Yeah, I think was that Michael Edwards at one point at Liverpool? I don't know if he's still there now, but yeah, that.
No, he's, I mean, not there. He's
you
left.
Think you think what you pay someone like him compared to the difference in playing a top footballer anyway is kind of peanuts in that perspective, but he can transform a club, so you may as well go for the best that you can get.
Well, I think Michael Edwards would have been paid decent money, but a lot of scouts that are travelling around England, travelling around the world, not saying at Liverpool or Man United or Arsenal, they get paid decent money, but a lot of clubs, the scouts get paid nothing, hardly compared to what the players get. But these are the guys that are going to bring in the next £100,000 a week player.
Yeah.
So for me, it's so important to have a respect for that department because, once again, what is the most important thing in football? People say two things to me. Oh, mentally, you've got to be right. Well, okay, if it mentally you've got to be right, make sure your mental health of the players is looked after. Not sure that's the case so much. It's better than it was. And you're scouting. And then I think, well, okay, pay your recruiters the good money and get the best recruiters that you can. I've been banging on about that for years.
Okay, and I think if we end it on one question, if there's one thing that you could change about modern football, what would it be?
Oh, God. One thing if you could change about modern football. Too easy to say VAR, but VAR taking so long is irritating. I find it really difficult, the offside. I know you're talking about if it's a half a centimetre offside, it's offside. But really, I kind of think the advantage has got to go to the team that's scoring a goal. But I suppose if it's half a centimetre offside, but that goal I saw the other day for Brighton, McAllister scores that goal. It's
just
in the top corner. It doesn't. It's not given. And people can say, well, look, that, you know, that's how it is.
No one's from Leicester's appealing that anyway.
No, well, it's like you're talking about half a centimetre. I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt on the offsides to the striker, if that was something that was possible, but it's not. Now we've got VAR. I think VAR, in a way, is a good thing as long as they do things quicker. And I'd like to think that sometimes, I saw it last week. I was at the Chelsea-West Ham game. When West Ham equalised late in the game, it was never a foul. And he came back and looked at it, and they told him to look at it. Referee wasn't brave enough on that occasion. That wasn't a foul. He's got to give that. So most referees, when they're told to look at something, they're basically saying, disallow it.
Yeah, yeah.
thinking all the VAR decisions, only one referee has kept to the original decision. I think that's quite important for a referee to be braver in. But the offside one is, when it's a millimetre, then you think, well, really? Give the advantage to the striker.
Yeah, because as a fan in the stadium as well, you kind of got to think, oh, is this going to be ruled out? And you shouldn't be thinking that as
well. You celebrate team
just scored, yeah.
You know, that's what's happening now. When it first came in, it was taking 5 minutes for a decision, but everyone's celebrating the goal twice now. And I love football, so when I watch that goal, I think, wow. And that goal, that boy will never score a goal like that again. But someone is going to say, well, actually, that's it. If it's a millimetre, it's a millimetre. And I think, well, yeah, but if you have to look that closely and it takes you 5 minutes to make a decision, give the advantage to the person who's just put it in the top corner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And I'm sure you're not the only person that would pick that one out as kind of one thing that they would change, because it's... Yeah, it's annoying.
It is annoying.
At the least.
We all want to see goals like that. We all do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Right, Brian, it's been a pleasure having you on, going through your team and hearing about your stories from playing and managing. And, yeah, just before we let you go, if there's anything you want to sort of plug your course or anything like that that you're getting on with at the minute.
No, it's not really. I mean, I'm just doing my thing with my presentation and trying to get it out there and get my word out there and talking about the mental health side of football and football itself. And yeah, I love doing that side of it. I've really enjoyed that, going out into different places and talking about that side. And it's kind of like a story of the year when we lost the playoff final, leading up to when we won the championship and got promotion. So, yeah, I love going that story. And, if anyone wants to hear it, I'm there. Get in touch and I can arrange something.
Nice one. Cheers, Brian.
Jack, take care of yourself.